Last year I went to California, and I got a grandson over there. He's in Vietnam, and he's always crazy about a war story. He bought a book. He bought this for me. '91, I think it is. '94. There's a picture in here of polar bears.
Right here.
Here it is.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Mark Engel.
That's me.
Oh, really? Wow.
You know, after we was,
Did he know that you were,
no.
In this picture? No, he didn't know.
No, I didn't know. I knew they took a picture there.
Uh-huh.
But what they did, this is Company C, I think.
Do you remember, this must be General Major.
General Ironside. See, what they did, they didn't know that we was, what treatment we was getting, and the folks at home, they were writing into Congress, they didn't know we had any soldiers in Russia.
Mm.
And they kicked about it, the maltreatment we was getting and so on. So they sent this Eisenhower, or
Ironside,
over to inspect our troops. And they picked out all the heaviest guys, one from each company.
Is that right?
And I was appointed to be a bodyguard over them. And now my grandson didn't even know that I was in it, so I spotted myself. When I see this picture, I remember when they took a picture there.
Uh-huh. What was this guy like, Ironside's like?
Huh?
What was he like? Do you remember anything about him?
Well, he wrote back that we were well taken care of, well fed. Like I said, and then the guys all hollered. He said, why don't you shoot
it?
After I got back. But you know, they picked one of each company for a bodyguard on them. So we went from company to company, and this is, I think, the C company.
And this is your typical blockhouse right there?
Yeah, well, we didn't build round ones. This is a round one.
Mm-hmm.
Ours are all square, what we built.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where the country looks like.
Oh.
That's where it's in the trench.
This is like by Tobas?
Yeah, that looks like, well, the whole Russia looks all alike, all along the river, I'd say. And I think this is where it's... I don't know where
this is. This is in Siberia, I think.
Yeah, that's Siberia.
Right.
So he didn't know when he bought this book, and I spotted that.
Right. Wow. Too much.
So, I don't know, ain't much more to say that I remember.
Did you ever encounter any Bolshevik propaganda? Did you ever see any of that? Did you ever come into contact with that?
No, the only message they ever saw brought in was the Polish people interpreted. That they could understand what the Americans were doing in Russia. They could understand why the English were there. But no, what the Americans were doing, they want to know why we were fighting.
I see. All right.
So if they ever got an answer to that, I don't know. But anyway, that's the only propaganda we had.
Right. How about was there any propaganda from the Allied side? Like propaganda from the British or the Americans, were you using any propaganda against the...
Not that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Or probably the officers did.
Mm-hmm.
John Volk is probably could tell you a lot more about that than I can, but we never was on the move. And my brother-in-law was the same company I was, and I never seen him in Russia until about 2 months before we left. And we didn't know the armistice was signed until in late January. We fought the next July.
Right. Did you ever encounter any YMCA or Red Cross? Did you ever see them up there at all?
I gotta tell you a story about that.
Okay.
We was in a town. I forget now what time it was. Shimovol, something like that. But anyway, the folks at home must have said, asked why we wasn't getting any Red Cross benefits.
Uh-huh.
And boy, we didn't get the cookies and the stockings and socks that were sent to us. Mm. We never got one. Nobody ever did. So I tell you what they did. They made us build boxes, but I didn't build them, but then I helped supervisor carry them out. The box is about 6 feet long, about 3 feet wide and 4 feet deep. Fine boxes. They painted a great big red cross on there. And they carried them out of a boxcar. They're all empty.
Is that right?
That's the red cross.
Did you ever hear of any dissent in the troops at all? Like any dissension in the troops, where a lot of American boys were not getting along at all, mutiny maybe? Or
I tell you, after there was so much propaganda around there between the British and Americans, we mutinied one time, and we all refused to fight to go to the front line until the Indians took their turn. But that cooled over, so I don't think the Indians ever were on the front line. The Canadians had the artillery. They were real nice. We didn't have no artillery.
Canadians were good, though.
Canadians had the artillery. But I know one time we were retreated. That was in Tolvis. And we run as fast as we could. We couldn't hold them no more. And the artillery of the Canadians, they helped them pull them back, so we got out of there. We threw everything away we had, gas mask and all, anything that was heavy. So we lost the battle in the Tolvis because their troops were getting too strong. We didn't have an artillery. So we moved back to Chenova, I think the town was. I think that was about 15 miles away.
Do you ever have any prisoners? Any Bolshevik prisoners? Any Bolo prisoners? Any Bolo prisoners at all? Did you capture?
No, I don't think so. I tell you what happened to me one time. I hate to say this, but there was another. I think that was a Chenova, if I'm not mistaken. I put a bunch on guard again, and. Next morning I went down there and one guy was laid there, all chopped up in sections. Legs were cut off here, arms were cut off, he laid like this, arms were cut off, severed. Some Bolshevik got in there, done that.
So you don't know anything about prisoners at all?
Prisoners?
Yeah.
We never captured any. We take on that that they move.
Yeah. Where did your orders come from?
I'm English. Then I never seen a sergeant or a lieutenant except that blockhouse we was in, like I said, we said, hold your fire. Last time our captain got court-martialed over there, going out with women and so on. I forget the name of the captain now. And he got sent back to the United States. So then we got a different captain, but he never was with a bunch, not with our bunch at all. Our bunch never captured any. We fought skirmish line. First skirmish line I was in, this is a guy here from East of Zeal, what's that little town there? Ryan Branch, his name was, I think.
East of Zealand?
He was about 10 feet away. He got a bullet right through his head. There's another battle I was in. I think that was the Tolvis. That's right. The sergeant was up there. Sergeant says to me, he says, drop me, he says, take your machine gun, that's your machine gun. And there's a ravine. We had a line here, and say about a quarter mile, the Bolsheviks had their line. He said, the three machine gun nests cross the ravine there, he says, go out to get them. And so we went down there that night. Of course, it's always night there. We only had 3 hour daylight. And I took my crew down there. There were two trees like this. So I set up my machine gun so I could shoot between the trees. You had a little protection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And three guys deserted me. The one here from Holland. He's dead now. But they started the artillery on us, you know, they spotted us. They had spotters out somewhere. Uh-huh. Artillery shells coming closer and closer. So I think we finished one machine gun nest. I know we did, because after we went over the top, we went down there and it was empty. But anyway, the artillery has come so close that knocked that tree about 10 feet above our head. And I had a Beecher stuck with me. He's from Bay City. And he was going to run. So I grabbed him by the heel. And I just got a hold of him because we had to go up the grave, you know. I said, they'll get you sure. So I grabbed him by the heel. I said, get under this tree here. I said, make believe we're dead. And my sergeant was in the back line there. And you see the tree drop. He said, that's the last allotment, he says. So they went over the top. And the minute they got over the top, well, we went along with them, you see, the Beecher and me.
I see. When they came.
So then we had inspected that machine gun nest. That was only 100 yards away from me. And they were dug in. There was a little creek down there on the bank, just on the other side of the creek.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a mound with the opening where they shot through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was empty, so I know I got them.
Uh-huh.
So there were two more, so whatever became of the rest of them, I don't know.
Hmm.
So I didn't go very far with that machine gun, you know, that weighs 80 pounds.
Right, yeah.
And then your ammunition you got to carry,
right.
So.
Yeah.
Entry went, fell that I did.
What's your impression of the Bolsheviks? Just from, you know.
Bolsheviks?
Yeah. What do you think? What kind of people are they, you know? What would you say?
Well, I say they're more like the racketeers are in our country.
The racketeers? What do you mean?
They above rule and order. That's what I say.
They what?
They're above rule and order.
Oh.
They, yeah, how are you going to describe them? They don't believe in nothing. It's, how are you going to describe them? I don't think much.
Oh, you mean racketeers like the mob and
no, just a mob.
Oh.
That's all they are.
Right. Organized crime, that type of mob.
If they have a leader, well, they'll feed them a lot of stuff, you know, and that's what they believe. That's what they go for.
Hmm. What about the Russian people?
Well, most of them, what they call the whites, they side in with us, all the way we've met.
Uh-huh. What kind of government do you think they would want?
Huh?
What kind of government do you think they would want? The whites.
We never talked about that. I don't know what they want. They were satisfied. They were born and brought up that way.
Right.
And all the people we met, well, you couldn't find any fault with them. They were ordinary people. They never know any different.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had a postcard with me from New York, and I showed them a picture of that tall building, but they couldn't believe it. There was such a thing in this world.
Wow. Yeah.
So, that's about all I got to say.
One question, just like as conclusion now. Looking back on this whole Russian thing, your whole campaign, what do you think was the purpose of it all? Why did Americans go over there?
Well, like I said, we were sold to England for. Yet, here, the way I understand it, later on, Congress didn't even know we had American soldiers in Russia.
Huh.
We were sold just to a few guys in the Senate. They okayed that order, I guess, the way I understand.
Uh-huh.
And we should have never been there.
Hmm.
We were so bad with the Englishmen. When we got through, we were supposed to land in England again,
uh-huh.
But they didn't dare it. So they sent us to France. We got one in one harbor there, where we had to change boats. I forget what we done. That's not in Archangel's, down a ways. And the English boat sat next to us. And all we did is eat coal and whatever we could find out. You know, the fricks were so bad.
Yeah.
So they didn't dare to sit back to England again, right. So they sent it back to France.
Do you think your spending time in Russia has changed your life at all, or changed your...
I think so, they have. I don't know.
Made a definite impression on your life, though, huh?
Well, I think that...
How has it affected your life?
My life?
Yeah. Did you change at all?
No. I'll never change, as far as that's concerned. The only thing, what I always say, that we're so thankful we have a country like this. Still, it's the best country in the world that I've seen. We got religious freedom and everything. There's no countries compared. Now, I've been in France, and France can't compare to the United States. England can't. Even London can't. Mm-hmm. It's a different life, different country at all. I never have no desire to ever go over there again. Not even England.
Wow.
They have pretty good.
Especially not England, huh?
I was awful disappointed with London, I know that. The wealthiest people live in the oldest houses.
Right. That's true. What about when you came back home? What kind of reception did you get?
Huh?
When you came back to the States, the war was already over, right?
Oh, yes.
So what kind of a reception did you get?
Well, we were at Camp Brest in Boston, I think it was. We were there a week, I guess, and then they sent us to Detroit because we had an awful heavy bunch from Detroit in our company, in our outfit. So Detroit was wonderful. They had a big parade.
In Detroit.
But there's one thing I'll never get over. The sergeant or the corporal, I forget her name, I'm getting so old I can't remember her name anymore. Anyway, he came from Detroit. And we got in Detroit, they had all special booths. R's in one place and A's and C's all in one place, so their people could meet their children and so
I
on,
see, right,
their relatives. So this guy, his name starts with C. He's a corporal. But we was in France, he got drunk in France. He missed the boat. And this lady started to cry. She hung out to her husband, but he says, so-and-so is dead. So I went over there and talked to him. I told him that I was one of the bunch. And she asked me if I knew it. I said, yes. She says, he'll be coming on the next boat. I said, he had a little bit too much to drink the night before.
Is that right?
And they were the happiest people I've ever met.
Wow, that's a...
But what they did in Detroit, they gave us a dinner, and they had the cars lined up there, Buicks and Cadillacs or whatever. We could go any place in Detroit we wanted.
Wow.
And that was, of course, we were strangers. I don't know Detroit.
Right.
I didn't know where I was, so I didn't go nowhere.
Right. You just came back home?
Yeah. So from there we went to Battle Creek, back to Camp Custer again. And then we had a special in urban run to Kalamazoo at that time. They got us a special car.
Seen that before.
I think John Bucker went one time, didn't he?
I think he mentioned that he did, right.
A couple years ago, I was intent to go and something came up that I didn't go.
Uh-huh. I think it's around Memorial Day, right?
I was always more or less pressed for money, because my wife was semi-invalid, and I spent all they ever made on doctor bills, so
I
never got there.
Mostly it's advertisements. There are some lists of different companies. So you went from Camp Custer to New York, and then across the ocean to England for a while, right? And then, how did you know, when did you find out that you were going to be going to Russia?
We didn't.
When did you...
We didn't know where I was going.
When did you find out?
Or how?
Well, when we got on the boat in England, we went from London, got on the train, went way across the country, Liverpool, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that we surmised, they drilled us pretty heavy in England. That's about the only drilling we had. And one day, we was all issued heavy underwear,
uh-huh.
full underwear. So we had suspicion that we wasn't going to go to France. So we didn't know where we was going until always a couple of days on the boat. Then we found out we was going to Archangel.
Mm. What was the reaction?
Huh?
What was the reaction about, you know, by the rest of the guys? How did they react to it? What did they say when they found out that everybody was going to Russia?
Well, they never tell you anything on the boat, you know. So we didn't know yet. But when we landed in Archangel, we didn't know what country we was in. But in Russia, they practically all women do all the work, you know, boat loading and everything. The men don't work over there. And of course, we couldn't talk their language. And we started talking to them, and all they say is cock, cock, that's what? In Russian, you know. And we didn't know at that time, so. But we got on a boat in England. We found that out afterwards. That boat was not to be used for troops. It contained a disease on the boat. We got in Russia, we had 350 cases of flu. And some died. Some died on the way.
What was the medical care like?
Huh?
What was the medical care like? Medical care? Was there any medical care available?
No. You see, the whole trouble was, we found this all out afterwards, that we were sold to Russia for a year.
Sold to Britain.
And we wasn't at our own command at all.
Uh-huh.
And we found this out later on, that the reason we was in Russia, the Bolsheviks were going to overthrow the government, you see, and England had a lot of money and invested in Russia, the Bolshevik government. Well, if they'd overthrow it, their money would go. That's why they hired us for a year.
Uh-huh.
We've got 6,000 over there.
Uh-huh.
No artillery, and no medical care, no kitchen. We haven't seen a kitchen since we left Camp Castor.
Wow.
And all we got is a pocket full of beans and a pocket full of rice.
Is that right?
We had to build our own fire and cook where we went in hardtack. And we got corn woolly, corned beef. That's what we was issued.
Who issued this? Did this come from American supplies, British supplies?
Huh?
Did this come from American supplies or British supplies?
No. We even used Russian rifles.
Huh?
No American ammunition. And these Russian rifles, about a foot long and ours were.
Is there? They still shoot well? You know, good aim?
They didn't shoot good.
No?
Sometimes when we got on the skirmish line, well, we'd shoot a dozen shots and see somebody run in the woods and so we'd shoot a dozen shots before they found out we were shooting at them.
Wow.
And so.
So you said you were in D Company.
D Company, yeah.
Right.
So then we unloaded all the sick. And this slot, well, you fit it and me,
uh-huh.
We were about the first case of the flu on the boat.
By
the time we got there,
uh-huh.
We were about the best, you might say, to take care of the rest of them. So I said to my sergeant, I said, I want to stay with the boys, I'm not going to the hospital. So they filled up the hospital in Archangel. And then we sailed down the river a ways. Finally, they stopped by a old dock over there, and all those that had been sick, we had to go in an old barracks over there.
Oh, so you had to go there too then? You went to the barracks?
I went to the barracks.
Uh-huh.
But the sergeant wouldn't let me stay with the bunch, because,
uh-huh.
you know, if you had the flu, you're weak and so
right,
on.
Right.
So, got in the barracks, no fire there, no cook, no doctor. And we each had one blanket where you put half under and half over. And so the John Slough and me, we carried out, I forget, 7 or 8 corpses in 3 days. And the minute they got delirious, you can figure out they lived about an hour and then they were gone.
Mr. Volkers said that he was...
Huh?
Mr. Volkers?
No, he wasn't with us.
He wasn't with you then?
I haven't seen John Volkers in whole Russia, I don't think.
Ah.
You know, it was all...
But he said he was really sick over there.
Huh?
He said he was really sick over there.
Was he sick there?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Probably. He went to the hospital then.
Yeah.
That might be.
Uh-huh.
And those that were, wasn't right down sick, you might say, well, they were into this old barracks over there. So John Slack and me, we took care of all we could. And that's why I always think, after the war was over, that they sent all the boys home, you might say. Well, I know that they never got these, but we buried over there.
Right.
We laid them over there, three this way and three this way outside, because we were sick ourselves and done the best we could. And, and the Russian buried them all in one trench. No coffin or nothing. Just a little blanket over there and put them in. So I often wondered how they got these. Maybe they never did. I know one guy here from Holland, he died. His name was Cry. He's buried in there too. But his folks said, you know, they always asked the folks if they wanted their body back here. They said they didn't care if he stayed over there, because you don't know if he got the right one or not.
That's true. That's true.
So I never heard if they got him back.
What was your first impression of Russia when you got there?
Well, there wasn't much. The people, they don't even know how old they are. They just live along the river. We just went along the Divine and Vlaga River, you know. And we went from village to village. Sometimes we had to fight our way in, otherwise not. We didn't have no artillery.
So you went down the Divina,
yeah.
You went down the river, and then here's a map.
We went down the Vlaga River, I think.
Something like down here then?
Where's Divina?
Uh-huh.
Where's the Vlaga? Here.
This one here, Vlaga?
Oh, there's where they split then. Yeah, the Divina River. Went down here, and then Tolgas must be out here somewhere.
Right. Let me turn this map.
Semovar, I see. We've got that. Tolgas, where I had my first battle, really.
Right
there? Yeah. You know, after we was in there, we hooked it all down here. We didn't have no trucks or no transportation or whatever. We went from village to village. Then we was Shemova, I think that is pronounced that, isn't it?
Shemova, right.
Yeah. Resnick. We run here somewhere, and then they had some machine gunners. So they sent me to machine gun school.
And while you were there?
Huh?
While you were there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think we was there about 8 of us, and I was in charge of the Irish American bunch. They had about 12 Englishmen over there too. They stayed in different barracks naturally.
How did the British and the Americans, how did they get together? Was the relations good there? Or?
I say not.
No, not at all.
We got more fight with the British who did with the Russians.
Wow. Why was that?
Well, in the first place, the British never took the front line. We always had to do the fighting, and they stayed back to us. And what I was going to say, we was to the machine gun school there. We finished the course, we took the exam, and we passed. I think only one dropped out. But anyway, I was in charge of our barracks, and the English were right across the street somewhere. So we got out through, and we had a relief B company. There's an iron bunch. Where the English went, we don't know. But anyway, English each got a sleigh to go to the front when they got through. And so So I had to drift out that we wasn't going to get in. We had to walk. That was 28 miles, I think it was.
Exactly.
You know, our barracks bag and pack and machine gun and ammunition and everything we had to carry. Yeah. So the Englishmen, I watched through the window. They got a sleigh apiece, called the Russian sled. Is not much bigger than a wheelbarrow, you might say.
Yeah, right.
But it, anyway, it carries your load, your barracks bag and your blankets and your machine gun and what have you, mm-hmm. your ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the drift of it, and I says to the boys, I says, I'm not walking. I says, if the Indians walk, we'll walk too, but not, they each get a sleigh for themselves. And we had orders to be ready, let's say 8 o'clock in the morning, to move. So then they come to my door, and they ask who's in charge there, says I am. And he swore at me, he says, you bloody fucking Yanks, he says, you can't do anything with them.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah.
So I heaved off at him, I hit him in the jaw, and I think I broke a jaw. But anyway, he went to his superior officer.
Uh-huh.
Well, there come two or three officers with a drawn revolver, and they put me under arrest up my right boy.
Wow.
And but that didn't take me long. I stayed there.
Uh-huh.
Then a guy, he's next to me in command. He says, I'll get out there some of us. We knew that there was one American officer at that time, lieutenant. So I said, I'll get word to him. And he says, no, you don't. He says, they're watching you too close. They had two guards in our building. And all of a sudden, I noticed that one window was broken, and he was gone.
Oh, he was gone, eh?
So he reports to the American officer
what
happened. So the American officer come in there and get his revolver drawn and asked me just what happened. Word for word, I said just what he did. And I had a superior officer. I was corporal, and, you know, acting corporal, and he was sergeant. And so I know the punishment of it.
Yeah, right.
So after he had told my story, and he asked these other guys, you swear to that? That's true. He says, that's the truth. He says, he told us not to move unless we get slids.
Uh-huh.
Same as the youngest did.
Yeah.
If they walk, we'll walk.
Right.
So he says to me, don't you move. Stay right here. He called up the next town. He hired all the, you know, these English, they bought up all the slaves that was in that village.
Mm-hmm.
So he called up the next town. They told him how many slaves he wanted. That was 6 miles away. So he says to me, come back. He said, if you're willing to walk down there, your slaves be ready. I said, that's all right. I said, as long as you cooperate. So we walked the next town and the sleds were ready.
So it was a little easier then.
But then he said, there's one thing. He says, I want you to travel 6 hours on and 6 hours off until you get to relieve B Company.
Uh-huh.
We had to relieve B Company because they were surrounded.
Uh-huh.
So we did. But then afterwards, I heard that the English major, or the English officer, had come in there,
mm-hmm.
he was dead. So who done it? I don't know.
Wow.
I got an idea this American probably had a fight with himself.
Oh, I see.
But anyway, what the Lord, that's none of my business.
Yeah. Huh.
So we traveled 6 hours on, 6 hours so off, and never really beat company.
Was it pretty heavy down there in Tongass?
Huh?
Was it pretty heavy down there in Tongass? Heavy fighting in Tongass?
Soldiers?
Tongass. In Tongass?
Yeah, in Tongass.
Was it pretty heavy fighting there?
Yeah, that's where we had the biggest battle.
Oh, yeah?
So they had, B Company had blockhouses built.
Uh-huh.
And we relieved B Company because they've been on 3 days and three nights all the front. So I got in the blockhouse with my bunch. I think I had six guys. three of them loaded. Two of them carried machine guns and ammunition, what have you. So B Company was gone. And then we seen a dead soldier lay there. Or some of the guys did. So I says, bring him in. They were from B Company, I think. So then the artillery started up. And I hollered at them because the shell was coming closer and closer. They had an observation post somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, drop them. I said, come inside. Then they dropped him. And the shell went under his body. And all we ever found of that guy is a leg. We had the wrapped leggings, you know, dangling up in a tree. That's all we ever seen of that guy.
Wow.
So then they went on guard duty. And I think we had three of us in the Black House. And I set up my machine gun with a tripod. I had one of the tripod machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
And the artillery kept on surrounding us. And the shells come close, and pretty soon the shell come right through the porthole.
Wow.
And I was unconscious. And the two guys were in that corner. They were dead. But I come to again, and I got a piece of the shell in the basement tent.
Is that right?
The nose of that
three-inch
shell, you might say.
Did you get hurt at all? No?
I didn't get hurt.
No.
You just knocked me out.
Yeah, probably the blast or something.
But that shell, the tip of the shell where the timer's on and so on, laid under my machine gun. But that's as far. They never attacked at us. If they pulled back or what was, I don't know. Because we had guards out all over.
Do you remember any of the commanding officers at all, American or British?
The highest we had was lieutenants.
Do you remember any of those at all?
And
remember Colonel Stewart? Does that ring a bell?
Huh?
Colonel Stewart?
Stewart?
Yeah.
That was the one Stewart, but I've never seen him, never met him.
Oh, okay.
We had one lieutenant. I think that was a Tallis, too. We fought there for about a week, I guess. Then I was in shooting my machine gun in the top story. We built inside there, the porthole we could shoot through there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the dugout in the basement.
It's there.
And one time he hollered at me, Robin, he said, hold your post, because there was fire is getting pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you just hold your own post. You're in the basement.
Wow.
That was the lieutenant, not Calhoun. He was a little guy.
Cudahy?
Huh?
Cudahy? C-U-D-A-H-Y.
That could be.
Cudahy? Cudahy?
I don't know what his name was.
Okay.
But he got scared. He thought we was all going to come down.
So then you went straight down to Tongass then. And then where
we went from village to village. I don't know where we was all.
Oh, I see.
I know that. I see some of these names there. Resnick. And Shimova. We was all down that river.
Were you in Archangel much?
I wasn't in Archangel at all.
Oh, not at all.
I never was there.
Oh. Except for in the very, very beginning.
I met a guy in Florida by the name of Smith. He was a polar bear. And I had a Smith in my company. So I asked him if there's any relation to him. He says, no, because he got killed on the skirmish line one time.
Uh-huh.
And I still got his little Bible yet.
Uh-huh.
And his name was in the Smith. So I asked him, he says he did. He was with headquarters in Archangel. He says, you never left Archangel. But I never was in downtown.
What about your clothes? Did you have enough clothes, like coats? And
that's one thing we had. You know, we never got paid as long as we was in Russia. Never got no rations. And this John Slot, you said you visited him.
Uh-huh.
He'd always volunteer to get rations. Sometimes we had to walk a mile, sometimes 2 miles to get our beans and rice.
Yeah.
And he always volunteered. And I was going to laugh about that. Every time he'd come back, he'd have a pocket full of beans and rice. That was for himself.
Right.
So So finally we found out where the Ingalls had their ration house along the river there. My sergeant was a go-getter. And if he was with us, I didn't see him half the time. You know, we was 25 in this little village, 25 in that. Mm-hmm. We was on our own, more or less. But if we was with him, he said, "Who's going to volunteer tonight? They'll go down and raid the Indians." And that's where we was fighting all the time. Uh-huh. But I was going to say, with clothes, we'd get all the clothes we wanted. Then we didn't get pay, we didn't get no rations. So then we'd sell blankets to the Russian people for rubles.
What was the money situation like then? Huh? What was the money situation like?
Money?
Yeah.
Well, the Russians seemed to have quite a bit of money. Uh-huh. They had rubles.
Oh, yeah?
And there's only worth 6 cents to a dollar. Our money.
Oh, I see. So they had quite a few of those.
But anyway, one time I bought an egg, I remember. And I paid a dollar for it in rubles.
Is that right?
600 rubles, something like that.
One egg.
And that's where we went from place to place. So, I don't know.
How about the sanitary conditions?
No.
Were the conditions very sanitary, clean, you know, baths, showers?
No, I'll tell you about the way the Russians live. The way I found out, we could talk to them a little because we had some Polish guys with us. Uh-huh. They'd interpret it to us. They could understand their language. Uh-huh. Well, when the Russians get married, the government gives them 3/4 of an acre of ground. And on that ground, there's enough logs there to build them a log house.
Right.
Or whatever it is, mm-hmm. those saw log houses there. Mm-hmm. Then they build, there's a couple windows in it. And then they build an oven in there, let's say about 18 feet long.
Wow.
And they arch that up, put a floor on there, arch that up. Then in the morning they shove it full of logs, they set it on fire, they have a chimney on there. Uh-huh. And that heats all your masonry work, all the clay. Then when the fire is burnt out, they pull the ashes out or leave the ashes in. Uh-huh. Then the woman, they bake their bread and they shove that in with a very big long ladle.
Right.
And then at night or whenever it is, I don't know how long they kept the bread, they call it kleba. Uh-huh. And then they pull it out again, and that's what they eat.
Huh.
And below that floor, it's about that high from the floor, that platform where they build the fire on, there they kept a couple of chickens in there. Oh. In the back of the house, they had a lean-to on there, and if they had a horse, they'd keep a horse in there.
Right next to the house.
Right inside.
Yeah. Probably.
Then the cockroach is so thick on the ceiling, if you drink a coffee, you had to blow your head off.
Wow.
Well, the walls were covered with cockroaches.
Did you live in any of these houses?
That's where the chickens feed on.
Oh, really? Did you stayed in houses like that?
Huh?
You stayed in houses like that? You were housed there?
Well, if we found a place, we didn't have no place to sleep. Right. We didn't have no barracks. We didn't have nothing. Uh-huh. We chased the Russians out and we'd sleep in there. We didn't sleep on the top on their bed, but then we'd pull our on the floor, whatever we could find.
Right.
And it would get a decent looking house. So.
What kind of government do you think those people wanted?
Huh?
What kind of a government do the Russians want? The Russian people, those people?
I don't know. We traveled about 300 miles inland. And I only ran across one or two schools and they were closed. They don't know how old they are. They don't know nothing.
Uh-huh.
And the way I understand, that the women do all the work, they chop the wood, haul in the wood, and the men they go fishing to bring in the fish.
Uh-huh.
That's all the work they do.
Wow. Too bad it's not like that here, huh?
Huh?
Too bad it's not like that here. I don't know if I can handle
it. No, it's terrible. Of course, it's a whole lot different.
Uh-huh.
I realize that, but when we were there,
right.
They just live along the country, along the river, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
what's between the rivers, and nobody knows.
What about the morale of the troops?
They seem to be happy.
So from the beginning, as opposed to the end, were they happy? They were happy in the beginning, right?
Well, they were discontent. You could tell that, but and they're on the way of living. They was brought up that way, and they didn't know any different. That's the way we look.
What about towards the in the, like, say, Christmas time? What was the morale at Christmas time, or in the early beginning, like January and February?
Well, the only thing, but as far as religion, every home had a little, what I call the image of Christ, you might say, and they had a candle burned in there all the time. And they would salute that, and the men had to take off their hats, the men's cap or whatever they wore in the house. That's the only religion they've had, as far as I'm concerned.
How about the on the, you know, for the troops? Was there enough medical care? Was the medical care good on the front?
Didn't have any.
Didn't have any at all. You know.
I never was sick after that. And
what about for the wounded? What would you do with the wounded?
Take care of themselves, more or less. The might have, of course, we was on the move all the time. You might say, I don't know, one time then we wanted something to eat. A bunch of us killed a cow, a Russian cow. And I helped skin it yet. But I never got a taste of it because the time we had it ready, we had to move again the next time. Oh, there are a lot of stories on there, if I could remember some of them. But as far as getting along with these people, that's, I remember one time I was corporal of the guard that night. I set out to guard, and you know, in blockhouses around the village and so on. This guy, one guy from Chicago, he bawled like a baby. I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Well," he said, "you always pick on me." I said, "No, I'm not picking on you. It's your turn." But I said, "If you're sick, I'll get somebody else." "No," he says, "I feel all right." And so he didn't report all night. And next morning I went down, all the guards and relieved. He was gone. The bullshitters come by there and captured him.
Is that right?
He was from Chicago, a real nice fellow. And I've never seen him since.